Hey guys, this is Casey. Just wanted to pop on real quick. In this episode, we've got Greg Doyle, Indianapolis Star writer, and we're really excited about the conversation we had with him about coronavirus and the Big Ten football season coming back. We talk a little bit of Boilermakers at the end. I just want to give a little heads up. I did have some audio issues originally recording this, and I spent the last few days fixing it up the best I can. So if you hear a little buzzing when I talk, it's what it is. And a couple of them, I had to re-record a couple segments word for word of what happened. So it might sound a little weird, but we really think the conversation is worth listening to, and we hope you enjoy it. Have a good Friday. We have a special guest for today, writer for the Indianapolis Star, three-time National Sports Columnist of the Year by the Associated Press, and who I like to call the heartbeat of Indiana athletics. Greg Doyle, how are you today?
You're calling me the heartbeat of Indiana athletics?
Oh, yeah.
Oh!
State overall, not that school to the south.
Right, I know what you mean. First of all, I mean, that's kind of what I wanted to do when I got the job here. I realize you're not asking me about that, but that's what I wanted to do, what I wanted to be. But it's hard to come in from some other state and do that and be that. Then again, the Star gives you, you know, whoever's got my job, Bob Krabs before me and whoever's next, you got a pretty good shot at being that person. At least you better. But the state is very parochial, and they don't like who they don't like. And a lot of times that's me. So I can't ever tell what the hell's going on.
All I can attest to is when I was covering Purdue basketball live, anytime Greg Doyle was at the game, it just felt different. I don't know whether it was because you found the story or the story follows you somehow, but you always knew there was a moment and you would get it.
The story follows me. I'm like Forrest Gump. Weird stuff happens when I'm in the building, and it's true. It does. I'm a magnet for weird, but thank you.
I'm a big fan, and I know a lot of our listeners are. And I'm super excited to have you here to talk about Big Ten football, which I guess is happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very strange thing that we're talking about. Had you told me this 2 weeks ago, I guess I would have said, well, the momentum is going that way. But until it happened, I wasn't sure. I mean, obviously, until it happens, you just don't know. You can't possibly say, yeah, that's going to happen. I mean, 2 weeks ago, we had one guy, and you know who I'm talking about, one guy tweeting from Columbus, Ohio. And I'll be honest with you, his name is Sir Yacht, you know, like the boat, you know. And when I first heard of him and saw a couple of his tweets, I thought he's a clown. Now I realize, I mean, it took me about a week to realize, no. He may or not be a clown. I don't know. But clearly somebody at Ohio State is feeding him like legit information, and they're kind of using him. They were using him to, you know, get momentum. You know, it's the same reason there's social media influencers, right? You know about influencers. They were using him, hoping he'd be an influencer and propel, hey, Big Ten's coming back. It's coming back. It's coming back. And he had people who know feeding him stuff. So anyway, I was following that guy. I wasn't following him. But I was looking at his Twitter for timeline, and basically it was like reading Ryan Day's mind. So I was just following Ryan Day's thoughts by reading his Twitter feed.
So you're giving Sir Yacht the blessing of being legit?
Well, no. No, not at all. I'm giving him the blessing of being used. He was absolutely – But in a good way, I mean, not in a good way, but like we all, reporters, for the most part, with a few exceptions, Adrian Wojnarowski being one of the exceptions, most of us are just being used.
Right.
Whether we break something or whatever, we're given stuff. Now, if we go out and dig something up, that's different. But for the most part, we're all being used. Coaches decide which one of us they want to bestow their leaks on, you know, I'm apparently rare in this business where my ego is not so big that I think when I get a scoop, I did that. When I get a scoop, I'm pretty aware some coach gave it to me for some reason. You know, I didn't earn it. You gave it to me. Well, this kid, whoever he is, didn't earn anything. They just gave him stuff. They used him, but they used him to put out stuff that people were paying attention to and that turned out to be true. So am I giving him my blessing? No, he was used, But much like a lot of dumb people, right, they don't know they're being used.
So, Greg, he was being used to get football back. Do you think they did get it right the first time when they said no?
Oh, for sure they got it right the first time. Now, and I don't know about anybody in your community, although there's a little bit of both all over the place, so I'm sure there's some people out there that will disagree with that. But they got it right the first time. It doesn't – just because the SEC, Big 12 and ACC played or started or tried to, whatever – that doesn't mean, well, you're wrong. If they played, then you're wrong. No, no. Maybe they played and they're wrong. But the Big Ten got it right. And I even understand why they're in a vacuum, which we don't live in. But in a vacuum, I can kind of understand why they're coming back now. They feel like there are advances in testing. They feel like they've got the funding from federal, wherever they're getting it from. They feel like they've got some tests for myocarditis that they can pick up on who's got it early, which doesn't give me a lot of comfort. Like, I don't really want to be told that, yeah, our player's going to get myocarditis, which will affect them for the rest of their life, yeah, but we're going to catch it early so they don't, at least don't die on a football field here. Well, that's great. But that, what that means is they can't play anymore if they have myocarditis. So I'm not a big fan. So I understand why they're coming back in that sense. However, I cannot help but think they just gave in. They caved. The money, the fact that other teams are playing, the fact the president's calling the commissioner, the fact that you got the whiny parents are suing the conference. I mean, they just caved in. They made a really, really – it's like being a parent. You make a really, really hard decision, and sometimes the hardest thing to do with the hard after making a hard decision is sticking to it, especially if your kids are just whining at you nonstop. But, Mom, but, Mom. I raised two kids. I know it's hard enough to say no. It's really hard to keep saying no every hour of every day for the next 10 weeks. And the Big Ten didn't have the guts to do it.
Yeah, Greg, you led perfectly into two things I wanted to ask about. Was it pressure? Obviously it was, from a whole bunch of people. And you're touching on something that's going to be hard for our society to wrap their heads around. Just because they were right then doesn't mean they're wrong now. Just because they're right now doesn't mean they were wrong then.
No, very few people want to change their mind or want to tolerate when someone out there like you or me changes our mind. And not that I've entirely changed my mind on this. I'm just saying I can see why they'd come back. I don't hate it like I would have hated it had they never shut down in the first place. But there was a conference call or a video call, I guess, when the Big Ten announced they were coming back. And they had six people on there. Three of them were ADs. Commissioner was on there and a couple others. One of the other, a doctor from Ohio State. You know, the other was the president of Northwestern. That guy was the star of that conference call because he at one point said, when the facts change, so can your opinion. And I'm like, yes, amen to that. Like, there are so many people out there that say, why don't you stick to your guns? Well, because the ammunition changed. And that's what happens in a fluid society. But anyway, you're touching one of my buttons there, Casey.
I feel you. You know, they act like this virus has been around for ages and we should have all the answers. But we're working with a lot of limitations. It'd be nice if we could admit, new facts without believing they're entirely conspiracy theories. But on a little more personal level, you cover these kids, you talk to them, you get to know them, their families. What do you feel like our responsibility to them is as fans? You as a writer, the colleges themselves, what do we owe them, in looking out for them? In what way are we responsible for what happens to them now?
Well, first, I want to say something that I've told several people, including the starting center at Purdue, Sam Garvin. I mean, he's awesome. He sent me a long email about a week ago. After the Big Ten said they're coming back, and I wrote what I wrote, which is they're coming back, they caved, let's see what happens next. He wrote me a long email, very, very nice, very smart. I mean, listen, I wish all readers could disagree with me with as much class as this kid did. I mean, you can disagree with somebody and have them hate you, which most people do with me, or you can disagree with me and then have me really, really like you, and that's what he did. And I'm not just saying that because it's a Purdue podcast. And I wrote him back. And what I wrote him is what I'm going to tell you is that if I were him, if I were a player, I would hate me too. I would hate me, and I would hate people like you and people that are trying to stop us from playing. If I was a kid, you can't tell me I can't play. I mean, so I'd want to do it. I understand entirely. The only responsibility I feel, and not in a condescending way, like these kids aren't smart enough or mature enough to make the decision, so I'm gonna make it for them. Not like that. The responsibility that I feel is just to tell what I think is the truth. And a lot of people think, well, I just told the truth. Yeah, well, you can tell the truth and be wrong. So that's not a bulletproof thing. So I never try to say that I'm just telling the truth. Yeah, it's my truth. But my truth is I think this is really, really dangerous in a lot of ways. Not for the players, yeah, down the road, perhaps, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a level of that for sure. That's not my biggest concern. And people have been painting me with, hey, how many players have died? Like, do you read me at all? Because if you read me, I've never said we've got to save these players. Right. That's not my problem. My problem is we've got to save society from this virus that won't go away, and football's not going to help. However, so my responsibility that I feel. I just feel the need to always write my truth and not let the mean-spirited, and I mean mean-spirited people on the other side from shouting me down, because they're trying. They're trying to shout any of us down that – put up a stop sign and say, wait a minute, why are we playing football again? To explain to me that they try to shout you down with cruelty and meanness, and they're going to make a lot of people give up, but not me. That's my responsibility, not me.
Well, we all thank you for that. I think for me, what it comes down to, and tell me if you agree with this, playing football as a college player is no more of a threat. It's the fact that everyone's on campus at that age where they're not going to socially isolate the way that a lot of us can and are going to try to do. Danger comes with that campus life, not football.
Yeah, it's all of that. It's kind of a vortex. If you have them all on campus and you say the football is okay, you're kind of sending a message. Well, you are sending a message to the rest of the campus that you can be together in small groups, because watch what we're letting happen on national TV. So it's really hard to tell kids, and I've got two of them, and I was one. And especially if you're 21 years old and you've got those hormones that you've got, and you maybe you've had a drink or two in you, it's really hard to tell that group of people.
Yeah.
On the one hand, it's okay for 100 players to play football and practice every day and bang and collide and swap, spit particles in the air and all that. That's okay. But you kids can't go to a party on Friday night. You can't go to a bar. You can't karaoke. You can't. I mean, you just can't have it both ways. And so, in theory, the football players actually ought to be safer and probably will be safer, minus the myocarditis threat, which is no small thing. But they ought to be safer from the virus itself than the kids on campus, because they're getting tested every day. The kids on campus aren't getting tested. They're getting tested every day. And so they'll find out really quickly you can't hang out with that guy anymore because he's for 2 weeks. He's quarantined. They've also got all the pressure in the world and the reason in the world to be safe away from football, because they want to play on Saturday. They want to practice. So I would, again, it's why I've never said this is about protecting players. They ought to be the safest group on campus. But it's just the whole big picture of this virus is not going away. We're not doing enough to make it go away. And we keep sending these mixed signals and half measures, half steps. And I kind of liken it to, again, I'm a parent, so I think about a parent in almost everything I write and do and think, and probably just you can't help it once you've been a parent. My thought about this is kind of like teaching your kids to sleep through the night. When they're about 1 year old or less than one, and you want to get them sleeping through the night, and it's hard, and they're going to cry, and you can get up every 3 hours and hold them, and because you just feel so miserable here and cry, and then you can basically cripple your kids so we can't sleep through the night, and cripple yourself so you can't sleep through the night, or you can be really tough for about a year, and plan it out and stretch out their time in bed longer and longer and longer until one day, what do you know, they're sleeping through the night, and what do you know, the virus is gone, but we keep picking that baby up in the middle of the night. And telling them it's okay. And we're never going to get through the night like this.
That was a very succinct and good analogy for it. Have you, Greg, talking to players, coaches, have you gotten a sense of fear at all? Or do they overwhelmingly want to play?
No fear, and more than no fear, borderline belligerence. And again, I say that as somebody who, if I was them, that'd be me. I'm not mad at anybody. But almost belligerence, and every time I write something, and I've written on this topic, I mean, a bunch, how could you not? Every time I write on this, there's a couple coaches that text me angrily, like they're mad at what I'm saying. And I'm talking about not Final Four. I'm talking about borderline Final Four coaches. I'm not talking about Matt Painter.
That was a careful distinction.
Yeah, no, not Matt. He's never texted me angrily. I don't want on your campus, on that campus, that I don't want anybody thinking that. But I've got a couple coaches that text me angrily, and I can tell that they're texting me from the position of I really hope this goes away. I hope that I'm right. I want to be right so badly, therefore I am right. And therefore, whoever you are, me in this case, you're wrong. Why are you wrong? Because I just want you to be wrong so bad that you're wrong. And that's not how science works. It's not how arguments ought to work. It's not a matter of who wants to be right more, then you win. But that's what Twitter and social media and just the world has become, is whoever objects the loudest or the meanest with the most Twitter followers and gets those retweets, they think they've won just because of volume. And that's not how it works. You can have literally zero followers and you can tweet out some brilliance and be right and no one even noticed. But anyway, this is a world based on volume. And I used to be a loud guy at CBS. And I used to be a screamer, but I grew up a little bit.
It's a weird dynamic we live in when believing in something makes people think you're rooting for it.
Oh yeah. That's another button is, you know, people like me and Dan Wolkin of USA Today, and I guess Pat Forty, and there's a few more of us that have consistently kind of said, man, this is not the right time for football. And we can all do it different ways. And I think Wolkin's been a little bit more shrill, S-H-R-I-L-L, shrill about it than I've been. But yeah, people, oh God, if you want to get muted by me, if you want to get muted by me on Twitter, I'm not blocking you, but if you want to get muted by me, call me a Corona bro. Because what that means is not only are you saying, I mean, that's just stupid. Like, cause the Corona bros allegedly are the ones rooting against football. Like, we don't want football, but not is it stupid, but that means you're now quoting the guy that created that term as if that guy should be influencing anybody. Anyway, if you tweet me something ugly, and I always like to click on the profile and look at the last 5 or 10 tweets, like, okay, who are you? Before I make a decision to mute you or not, who are you? Invariably, they're retweeting OutKick, and do your thing. That's fine, but you're going to do your thing away from me because I can't listen to people like you, not because I'm afraid of what you have to say, but because I'm so discouraged that the world thinks like you think that I just can't take it, so I got to mute you.
Yeah, it's becoming pretty apparent that sports are becoming a little too important to our society.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is just the read I'm getting. All these overreactions. It's scary that with all these people dying, that's where our focus is.
Well, where the focus is right now is people just want to be right. And this is sports. This is politics. You know, I was at CBS before I was here for about 10 years. And so I wrote about a lot of schools, and I typically ripped people back then. I was just kind of a mean guy. And most fan bases are kind of the same. They're the same in that if whoever the jerk is that's coaching a team, if he's your jerk, you like him and everybody's wrong. You know, it's because we want to be right. Like, I mean, the case in point that I will always use is Tennessee fans. Tennessee fans defended Lane Kiffin when he was there, and he was such a gigantic idiot. I mean, he was such an idiot and proved it every week. And people like me would write it every now and then, and Tennessee fans would be furious. Like, how dare you? And then the day Lane Kiffin announced that he was leaving for like Southern Cal, they stormed his neighborhood, and like he was afraid to leave his house because they hated him. Like, hey, people, this is who he is. It's who he's been. It's what we've been saying. Don't come to my side now. I don't want to hear that you hate him now. No. It shouldn't matter if he's coaching your team or not. You think the way he does his business is great. And so people want to be right, and they want to be right in politics. And so that's why you decide who you are. You're Republican, you're Democrat, whichever one you are. And whichever one you are, your side's always right. It's the damnedest thing. Like, I vote the way I vote, and my side's never been always right. But no one wants to – I mean, whoever you vote for, it's if that guy or that woman says something, then they're right. Why? Because they said it. It's not good enough, but that's where we are in sports, the coronavirus, everything.
Yeah, it is a scary landscape, and the harder it's getting, the scarier it's become. So with all this, are we willing to look towards the football field and the games to come?
Oh, why not? They're going to play for a while. I don't think they're going to finish the season. They might. I wouldn't bet money they will, but they're going to start it for sure.
So the schedules were just released. There is a pretty thorough, thought-out plan. Hope your team stays below that 5% threshold. If it happens, if the games play out, what are you expecting for Coach Brown's Boilermakers?
Well, I guess it depends on, do we think Rondale Moore's coming back? And I feel like if he's coming back, we'd know by now. We don't know yet, right?
Yeah. At most, we've heard that there was contact being made and it didn't seem likely, but he hasn't hired an agent, so our fans will absolutely gravitate towards that one fact. I would imagine it, personally, I would imagine it's very hard to initially make that choice to say goodbye to college and then to make the choice to come back after you've already talked yourself through it.
You know, a lot of players have actually said they're coming back. It's really weird how a lot of players are opting back in, specifically at Ohio State. But they had a couple kids opt out, I think, before the Big Ten canceled football, definitely in the middle of it. But anyway, a lot of kids, the receiver at Minnesota, I think he's coming back. A lot of players are coming back, and it's very – I mean, I want to say it's strange to me. I guess it's not. People can change their mind. They get caught up in the emotion of, wow, the Big Ten's back. And I actually, when the Big Ten announced it was coming back – well, actually an hour or two before it announced it was coming back, but we all knew it was happening – I went on Twitter and found there's two Ohio State players. I think one of them plays center and one of them's a safety, I want to say. But I went and found both of them on Twitter, looked at their mentions, and just it was just thousands of Ohio State fans begging him to come back. Yeah, I thought I might be right in that, and I didn't. But it was just, you know, one of the facts I was looking for. So Rondell Moore, if he's not back yet, I'm guessing he's not coming back. Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. Which I hope I've been to this point now, but I really want to stress this. I have no idea what to expect from Brohm's team, and not just in that meta sense of, well, we got to see what happens in the field. I'm not going to lie to you and hide behind that. I'm going to tell you that I really don't know. I haven't, to be totally honest with you, I haven't given a little – Not. I mean, this is actually the first time I've thought about how good will any team be this fall, any of them. Because until last week, they weren't playing, and my head is in so many different directions right now. I have no idea. I don't even know how good they were last year. I want to say they were 4-8, were they?
I believe that's correct. They lost pretty much everybody playing a fourth-string quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. The thing about – and I was there the day that Rondell Moore and
–
Eli
Sindelar.
Yeah, both got hurt, like, on the same play. I was there for that, and it was unbelievable. So, yeah, I'm – the thing about Brohm, and there's not a lot of coaches I'd say this about, but the thing about Brohm is that I think he's so good, and I realize his win-loss record doesn't show it, but he's not coaching Alabama now, is he? I think that he is so talented as a coach, has so much ability as a coach, that almost predicting what Purdue will be any given year is a fool's errand, because he's a guy that can make you look stupid. You know, a lot of coaches out there, barring something crazy, you kind of know what they are. Jeff Brohm, barring something crazy, you don't know. You just don't know how good he's going to be. So I wouldn't, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
So let's focus, kind of zoom out then. Does this year kind of get a pass, regardless of what happens on the field because of all this craziness with COVID? This year was supposed to be his year. He has his players, his schemes, his coaches. It's his program. We have to delay that judgment a whole nother year now, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Now, it doesn't mean this year, let's assume they play 9 games or whatever the season is. Let's assume it all happens. It doesn't mean we don't remember this year going forward. You know, 2 years from now, when people are looking at the body of work, we don't just say, well, they went, let's say 2-7 or 7-2, whatever. But I mean, we'd only be looking back on it if people wanted to get mad at them. So let's say the 2-7 this year. 2 years from now, we're not going to say we're going to discount 2-7. That's part of it. But you damn sure don't make any decision after this year. And I don't mean firing or not. That'll never happen. But I mean, as a fan base, what you do, or even an individual fan, what you don't do is look at this year and say, well, based on his first 3 years, blah blah blah. No, this year's the ultimate free pass, pretty much for everybody.
Are there any storylines, Greg, that are going to permeate through the pandemic? Or are we just stuck on COVID? It's hard for me to imagine actually caring about Alabama going 8-0. Do you think people are so hungry for a distraction that they're going to throw themselves fully into the
season? I do, for sure, for sure. We didn't come this far to then pretend we're not here. We're here. It's football. And that even – look, that up to a certain level extends to me, and I've been Mr. Corona bro this whole time, but – but, you know, I've covered 2 Colts games now. I've covered them on my TV, and I've done Zoom with the players and the coaches from my living room afterwards. But I've noted the coronavirus. Like, both games, the first game of the year, you have to note how weird this is. There's no fans there, wherever there was in Jacksonville. And, of course, yesterday was the Colts' first home game and small crowds. So you mention it, but it's not the story. It's not the storyline. It's barely a whole paragraph. It's a sentence or two. And that will continue as the season goes farther and farther along. That'll keep, you know, So same thing with college football. I realize that until that first game happens, and even that first game, that will be the dominant storyline. Holy cow, we're playing. Holy cow, and you know, maybe these players didn't play because of the virus, mm-hmm. whatever, but this is actually happening. That'll be the plot. But game 2, 3, and 4, it'll be like, what do they look like on the field? Because honestly, people, even me as a guy who's been writing about it, like there's only so much of this we want to think about. And football, you know, we've all made our positions clear, and you can be a jerk and an idiot and hammer your point, and I don't mean you, I mean right. me really, and hammer my point every single week that they shouldn't be playing, they shouldn't be playing, they shouldn't be – why? I mean, everybody know if you read me, you know what I think. So let's just talk about what we're actually watching. What I don't understand is I get email, tweets from people saying because my season advance in the Colts was, you know, the only 2,500 fans can be here and the coronavirus can bite me. That was the headline, I think. And so I got people who probably didn't read the story, but if they did, you know, who knows, saying, wait a minute, if it's bad for the Big Ten to be playing, if it was bad for fans to be at IMS, why are you upset that only 2,500 fans can be at the game? Well, dummy, please think for just a minute. I'm not upset in a vacuum that 2,500 fans will be there. I'm upset that the coronavirus exists and that we can only have 2,500 because it's there. I'm mad at the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. I'm not mad at the Colts for not letting in 50,000 right. people. But people just can't – like there's a couple thoughts there. People can't grasp two or three – it's like everybody can do, you know, 2X equals 8. Right. Okay, X is 4. We can all do that. But you add a Y in there, and people are just blown away. 2X plus 3Y equals – I mean, you add a second variable, and people can't keep up. And I'm trying to write stories with 3 and 4 variables because the world's a confusing place. And I got folks that are muted now, but they just can't – they can't do the math, and I can't help you if you can't do it.
No one is rooting for coronavirus. No. Okay, let's go ahead and wrap this up with a little bit of a lighter question. How upset should Purdue fans be that the automatic win against Ohio State isn't on the schedule?
Oh, man. Have they played the Buckeyes since the Tyler Trent game?
I don't think so.
I hope not, and I hope they never do again. I think – I mean, that would just be – you know, you talk about a walk-off home run. You talk about dropping the mic and walking away. The Big Ten needs to permanently – not schedule Purdue against Ohio State, just because that was a mic drop moment. That was a mic drop game, and it's almost like it'll devalue – well, it won't devalue what happened. But it's just I don't want to go back to a world where Ohio State does what it does to Purdue more times than not like that, like this is okay or whatever. It's not okay. We were all there the one night magic happened, and I don't – you know, once you've seen a magic trick, you kind of don't want to go back and watch – a lecture on football. No thanks. I was there for the magic. You can keep your lecture.
2020 has been a tough year, but that is one of the best takes I've heard in a long time. And I'm pretty sure you can get the entire Boiler Nation in line with you there. Greg, thank you again for joining us. It's been great to talk with you about some complicated issues, but people need to hear the hard conversations. And even if we disagree, acknowledge that we're not rooting for the coronavirus or against football. There's just a lot of other things at stake, and we're all just trying to figure it out. Greg, what do you have going on? Where can people find you right now?
Well, when is this posting?
Hopefully either tomorrow
or Tuesday or Wednesday. I've got a story going up probably tomorrow, I think, on Pine Village. So I was up in your neck of the woods. I was telling you that before off air. I went to Pine Village. They've got one of those historic – I mean, Indiana has about 50 of them, but one of those historic gyms that are just so unique to the city – and the gym's going to be torn down in a couple of years. So I went to Pine Village, which is the smallest town I've ever been to. I mean, I've been to a lot of them, but never one like this. And anyway, so that's a fun story I've got coming up. And then otherwise, people know where to find me. And I don't mean that in an arrogant way, but I've been here long enough that Greg Doyle, like, I'm not going to spell my name anymore for people. Because even if you spell it wrong, if you try to find it, you can find it. So if you can't find it by now, it's fine. Do your thing. You obviously don't like me, and that's okay. But you can read a lot of people out there that will tell you what you want to hear all the time. And if that's the safety that you people prefer, then go find your safety. I'm not here to make fun of anybody, but I'll tell you some things sometimes you don't want to hear, and there's some danger in that.
Well, we really appreciate it, and you are one of the best voices out there. Keep doing what you're doing. And that's it for the Hammer and Rails podcast.
Some would call me the heartbeat of Indiana, but not me. Not me, of course. I wouldn't even agree with it.
Well, it's been said, it's recorded, it's
true. It's on the internet, it's true. Thanks, Casey.